This podcast is brought to you by Audible. Please visit audiblepodcast.com/GOT for your free audiobook download. Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Game of Thrones on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about all of season 5. You know, we're doing the wrap-up cast.
Yep.
As we tend to do.
A couple things I want to start with is, number one, even though we went away from him for the final episode here, that was, you just retreated to the oysters, clams, and cockles. Trap remix that someone forwarded to us from YouTube.
How could I not?
And it completely destroyed my weekend. Like, didn't 5 minutes go by that I wasn't singing that song?
Yeah, yeah.
Or some variation thereof.
Same here.
But I wanted to pimp for a final time this season the person who graciously provided our theme song for season 5. It's the Game of Thrones 80s television theme remix by Highway Superstar. And you can find all their content, including that track, at soundcloud.com/highwaysuperstar. That is always linked in all of our show notes. But I thank them mightily because I thought it was awesome. I thought it was the perfect fit for our show.
It is, yeah.
Made us stand apart from the others.
And it's better than that horrendous rap song you had last
year. Yeah, you know. I'm
a lot of people hated it. A lot of people loved it.
So. I bristle when people go at Arya's prayer like that because I just don't know. But,
what are you going to do? You can't please everyone.
Another thing I want to talk about is a reminder that we are going to be playing through Telltale's Game of Thrones video game, choose your own adventure type video game, starting tonight.
Yeah.
You don't have to be familiar with video games or the previous Telltale games to pay attention and enjoy this, hopefully. I don't know how it's going because I haven't played it myself. So it'll be interesting, but we're going to record me and Jim and my girlfriend Cecily playing through this game collaboratively, and we try to have fun with it. We are power gamers by any stretch of the imagination. If something is funnier than effective, we will go down that path. So we're going to be starting that tonight around 7:30. Around 7 o'clock, we're going to post an article on baldmove.com. This is for premium subscribers only. So if you want to get in, it's going to cost you $2. Or, you know, $1 a month if you buy in quantity. But it'd be a minimum of $2 for the price of admission.
You know, and this is not all you get.
Yeah.
It's not like you're paying $2 for this one video.
No.
For one, there's going to be three episodes.
There's
going
to be three total episodes. And we'll probably do them. I don't know if we'll do them as they drop. Or we'll save them up for a pre-season for next year. At which case you can pay another $2 and get those other two or three episodes.
Yeah,
but we're going to do the episodes that are out. And it's going to stream from the Bald Move website. We're going to create the article 30 minutes in advance. We'll also slide it through Patreon and all the other stuff.
Yeah.
But if you want to get in on it now, go to club.baldmove.com and sign up. It's quick and easy. And you can get that access. And you don't have to watch it live. You can wait till all three of them come out and watch them in your leisure. You can watch them backwards. Yeah. You can splice 5 minutes at a time here. I don't really care.
No, it should be fun, though.
But, it was doing the Walking Dead ones was a lot of fun and is, I still think, some of our funniest content, some of those pieces. And we even had a character we dubbed the Kingslayer in season 2 of the Walking Dead one that was pretty interesting.
I hear that there are characters from the show in this, so maybe we'll see actual Kingslayer.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, maybe we can snub him.
Maybe we can. I hear you meet Jon Snow. I wonder if we can spoil his own, you know. Give him a warning.
How many times do you think we're going to say, you know nothing, Jon Snow?
The number's not going to be zero.
Okay.
Because you just did it. But yeah, that starts tonight. And we're going to be doing that every Tuesday night for the next 2-3 weeks until we're done. So that'll be a nice little way to extend your Game of Thrones experience. And also, we'll probably get around to doing these next year as well. So if you want to wait until next year, you can as well. But yeah, baldmove.com tonight.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Also want to talk about how to get old episodes, because we did one of the side effects of us producing so much content is that we really burnt through our feed. Now, just an inside ball, the reason that we only go back 20-ish episodes in our feeds is because we've got, and I don't entirely understand the technical issues behind this, but iTunes kind of starts governing you once you have so many accesses on a feed that they consider high traffic and it has a lot of content in it. And what they do is they stop updating you frequently. Like, they'll start only pulling you every day, and then it's every 2 days, and then it's, you know, every 3 to 4 days. And we got bit by that on The Walking Dead a while back. You know, I think it was the first show that we got a significant amount of episodes for, and, you know, it would take almost a week. So we trimmed their feeds down to like 20-ish episodes, which is what we tried to get a standard season in.
Yeah.
You know, for most of our shows, and that covers it. But when you're doing 3 shows a week, that's like half a season. Mm-hmm. And that sucks. There's a couple places if you want to get our old episodes, and keep in mind, we only have an archive back to season 4 because, I don't have, the first 3 seasons I did with Mad Brew. But if you want to go back and get all the spoiler stuff that I started last season, best way to do it, you can go to our website at baldmove.com, click on podcasts, click on the Game of Thrones feed, and it will show you all the articles on our site. And then you can go scroll to the bottom and do the previous next business to find the episode that you're looking for. If you use Stitcher, Stitcher has all of our feeds or all of our shows in their feed. If you're a Bald Move Premium subscriber, you can go to your accounts page. When you log into Bald Move, it's at the top right of the website, and it allows you to access feeds that, since they're not going through iTunes, we can provide you all of the episodes. So that's another good way. I'm trying to think. I mean, that's literally kind of the only ways you can go about it right now.
Yeah.
And I, you know, and the nice thing about the website is that the inline player plays on every major cell phone that I'm aware of. Mm-hmm. So it's not quite.
Yeah, it's got a fallback for, you know, if you can't do HTML5, it has Flash or vice versa. Yeah. You know.
And you can also download them all, too, as the raw MP3 files. So we're not trying to protect them in any way. It's just making iTunes happy, because iTunes is still like 70%+ of our.
No, it's you can't have a podcast without iTunes at this point.
You have, like, to bow before the iTunes feed gods.
Sure. So anything else before we get into the discussion of the season?
No. What did you think of the season kind of as a whole, in comparison to other seasons?
Okay. I think we should make the distinction, you know, this is compared to the other seasons of this phenomenal show, mm-hmm. not compared to television in general. In comparison to television in general, I feel like this is a great season of TV, period. In comparison to the other the other seasons of this show, I think it's probably the weakest.
Yeah, it's either this or season 2. And the way I personally rank it is 3 and 4 are almost identical for me in terms of quality. And then there's a slight step down and it's not even a step down. It's just not as many, oh my God, holy shit moments happen in season 1. Mm-hmm. Then you've got a reasonable drop off to season 2. And then I think season 5 is just below that.
Yeah, and like I said, I think in the last cast, it depends on your perspective on it, too, because, like, you know, Tyrion being my favorite character doesn't get much better with Tyrion than season 2, right?
Yeah. Season 2 and 3 are his kind of, like, real places to shine.
So, I mean, yeah, this isn't the perfect season by any stretch. I went back and I rewatched a bunch of it before, between the last cast and this one, and I feel like the same things we were complaining about still hold up, you know, even early on.
So it's not,
it's like
just
sand snakes, blah, no, because
sometimes, you know, on first watch, even us, we're watching 2 and 3 times
when you don't know what's going to happen in the next few episodes to kind of retroactively make it better.
Yeah.
That stuff still is not great. Mm-hmm. The stuff we pointed out, the sand snakes and the whole Dorne plot, are not that interesting. They're not well constructed. The Stannis stuff, not well constructed. I just don't. I wish this season was a little bit better.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. I feel like I got most of my kinks on the season worked out last week in the spoiler cast, and I don't, you know, it's not a fatal misstep. This is the year it seems like maybe traffic plateaued for Game of Thrones, because it started, last season ended on 7 million-ish and change, and this season started 8 million and change, and it kind of dipped below there, and then it got back to around 8.5 million for the finale. But it's certainly, you know, and I don't know what the pirated numbers, because they traditionally are even bigger, but it seems like as far as paid customers that we might have reached peak Game of Thrones. So I don't know what to make of that. I mean, that's still pretty amazing. The numbers are hitting. It's by far the most popular show on Game of on HBO.
I was going to say, it's not like, you know, there's a limit. There's an upper limit somewhere.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't surprise me if they're starting to find it.
All right.
At least for the size of audience they have now.
Sure. I mean, it kind of happened to Walking Dead, too, where it's like it got to the stratosphere and achieved orbit.
Yeah. How do you... Yeah. I mean, sure, you can go to outer space. You can go to another galaxy, but good luck getting there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I mean, eventually, I think we're hoping for a world in which every living being on the planet watches Game of Thrones, and it's just it's the births racing against the deaths to see how many more subscribers.
It's like the Truman Show, right?
Exactly.
Like, society just shuts down. We have the national fiesta, or siesta, rather.
Yeah.
Every day to watch Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. And we're in season 25, and Tyrion's still around, riding dragons.
I'm curious to see if you've come around any on some of the cliffhanger deaths. Like, you seem to be pretty skeptical of Stannis being alive.
Sure.
And I've gotten onto some Reddits, and there is an interesting theory where that makes thematic sense, that when Stannis, when he was leaning up against a tree, we got a couple other theories to read, but he's leaning up against a tree, and she gives him this spiel about how she's Renly's last surviving member of this Kingsguard, and she's there to whoop his ass. And he kind of like nods into the distance and says, "Do your duty then." People pointed out that the way he is lying, he was actually nodding towards Winterfell, and coincidentally saying, "Do your duty," hit Brienne as a reminder that she should be there for Stannis, or I'm sorry, for Sansa. And that then the theory is somehow Sansa is going to use Stannis as a bartering chip to get Sansa.
I don't like, where's the evidence?
Well, I mean,
where's the evidence?
I think, I don't know, like, if the evidence is that they smash cut away from her just as she's about to kill him.
Absence of evidence
and
cannot be evidence.
No, this,
man.
Is
it's
a theory.
Like,
this is a theory, and this is the evidence for it. They smash cut away, so you can't say that he is in fact dead. In fact, it would be strange for this show to smash cut away from someone's death and then turns out that, oh, no, yeah, they died as scheduled. It'd be much more Game of Thrones-y to not have him die. And secondly, the whole do your duty thing is the one that I thought was pretty impressive, because that cuts at the heart. That could be, you know, that I could see a person like Brienne taking that and interpreting it as, oh shit, this asshole's right, I should.
And it, yeah, but that completely contradicts what you were saying about the way she made her oath.
Yeah, but people
to Catelyn previously.
I agree. I mean, legally, I think she's in the clear, but I don't. Brienne never struck me as a strictly legal type of person.
Okay,
she seems to be more interested in the spirit of honor and chivalry and justice than the mere letter of the law. She's more of a chaotic good than a lawful.
I get it, but like, he says that and you turn around and walk toward what your other duty, like, she has two duties here, right?
Well,
one of them is to lop off the head of the man sitting literally right in front of her.
If she can,
she's got her sword up high, ready to go.
Yeah.
She's not going to take the half a second to chop his head off and then go do her duty with Sansa.
Well, what I'm saying is, if you have a live Stannis to barter with the Boltons to get Sansa. Now, she's unaware that Sansa took a header off of the cliffs of Winterfell here.
Sure.
So I'm saying, like, there's, and also you got to think of if Brienne had Stannis alive as a hostage, how it, and she's treating with the Boltons, that's probably high comedy. because they're going to lie.
Of course. And cheat. Of course. And screw Brienne her. Against the Boltons is no match at all.
But it's an interesting setup for next season. Like, other events would probably have to ensue to keep her from just getting a crossbow or getting strapped down to an X and flayed for her troubles. But I think it's interesting to simultaneously preserve Stannis and still somewhat of a villainous role and have him reduced to a chip that someone else is playing. I think that's kind of interesting.
Okay.
Doesn't seem like it's registering on the Jim Richter scale here.
No, I just don't see it happening. I mean, the evidence is super flimsy at best.
Okay.
All right. It's all extrapolating on something that may or may not have happened, whereas on the screen we see quite a bit.
So you're a agnostic deathist.
For Stannis, sure.
Okay, yeah. All right. Also, there is something I want to talk about before we get to the feedback, and that's like kind of my ruling on whether people are safe if they're just show watchers to start like just going hog wild into the spoiler section of the podcast and going on to Wiki of Ice and Fire and reading up their heart's content. There's a couple things that I want to say is that there are three main storylines from the books that have yet to be addressed. And it was my opinion up until a couple of weeks ago that the show was probably just going to streamline those and eliminate them. But I saw some casting news that heavily implies that the majority of these plot lines are going to boomerang back and be renewed with significance for next season.
The mountain's being recast.
Again. Again. No, so they're, you know, I'm not saying that any of those are on the Red Wedding or Purple Wedding or Mountain and the Viper level of, oh, shit.
Okay.
But they are significant.
All right. That's cool.
So, and again, I thought that they were just not going to do them. But, you know, and that's another argument. So how significant are they? I don't know, because those are similar to a lot of this stuff where they're in the middle of their resolution. So how would I know?
Yeah,
if they're significant or not. Also, I think that if you're a spoiler phobe, you probably aren't going to do this anyway. But if you're on the fence, I know that a lot of the theories that the book readers talk amongst themselves about are built on material that's kind of more obvious in the books than it is in the show.
Okay.
You know, because the books, you can do things like the way that Barristan introduced himself to Dany was as a disguised person. He was wearing a robe and he had the Obi-Wan Kenobi beard and he was just parading around as a different character for a good chunk of the books until he reveals himself at a very dramatic time. Whereas that would be, you know, ridiculous in the show.
Yeah, you'd need like Faceless Man type stuff.
Exactly. So because of that, there's a lot of things that are more hints or maybe even absent from the show that are made fairly obvious, especially even if you're a really stupid book reader and you get on the forums, there are plenty of people to make sure that you didn't miss any of the non-obvious stuff. So I could see how some people would be bummed out because things in the books that have not been presented in the show will actually spoil things that are presented in the show.
Okay.
And I assume that as we get closer to those theories being confirmed or denied, that there will be some kind of similar hints in the show. You know, and I think the show, like, I'm big on the theory of anytime we see birds in the season, we're going to understand in season six that that's been Bran kind of looking at events unfold in Westeros and on Essos. Could be bullshit. But that's kind of a way they can hint things in a show that I don't know that would work in the books. It would be extremely explicit in the books if, like, Bran's got an omniscient view and he's looking through birds. You just know because,
sure,
you know, it's written from his POV. So, but yeah, I think the reverse case, some people could be disappointed. And a lot of stuff you're missing out on when I was going back and reflecting on some of these spoiler stuff is that they're like prophecies and literary allusions from characters that you might not even be familiar with in settings that, you know, you're not going to be familiar with because they were very streamlined or cut out of the show. Mm-hmm. So it's like some of it might not even be interesting because it's two people that you don't know talking about a third person that you might know in a situation. And I'm just paraphrasing because I'm talking to book readers, and as a show watcher, you might be like, first 15 minutes, I don't even know what the fuck just he's talking about.
Uh-huh.
Now, having said that, you know, like for example, Maggie the Frog. You know, open up the season with Cersei and the younger, more beautiful queen and the golden shrouds for all your kids. I talked about that in last season, and I'm just talking about Maggie the Frog and Cersei's Prophecy, and you'd be like, what the fuck is he talking about?
Sure, yeah.
But yeah, if you're not scared by potential two or three semi-major, you know, A-minus, B-plus plot lines that could be spoiled for you, if you're not intimidated about hearing characters you don't know anything about with prophecies that might not come true, then I think you're a good candidate to join the ranks of the Adventuresome Show Watchers.
Okay. That's good advice for people.
And I think also, right or wrong, you need to be prepared if you join like different, I mean, not particular to Bald Move forums because we're more opening, but you get in some of these forums and if you're just a show watcher and you start joining in on the, yeah. I'm anticipating a lot of a book reader type chauvinism, mm-hmm. that you're going to be marginalized and not considered a true fan.
Game of Thrones hipsters.
Yeah, and they're gonna cram the you should read the books down your throat every chance you get or they get. So
I had a gilded steel hand before, it was cool. Yeah, that kind of shit.
Yeah. So if you can hang with all that, then yeah, by and large, we're pretty much caught up and in some important ways beyond the books. But it was hard for me because in this season, Jamie doesn't go to Dorne. It's two Kingsguard members that were you mentioned by name, but you didn't know them as characters, and yeah, they were the point of view characters for everything happening in Dorne. So does that mean they're going to take what Jamie was doing in the books, and that's going to be his thing for next season? Like I don't even know where to talk about difference between books. And the show, what that is, you know?
Sure, yeah, when they switch it up that much.
Same thing with Sansa. In the book, Sansa's still chilling in the Vale with Littlefinger and Sweet Robin.
Wow, okay.
And she's not at Winterfell getting raped by Ramsay Bolton. Some other poor woman is.
Sure.
But, you know, it's like that's a hard thing to reconcile and say, which is the real version? I assume that as we go on, that these kind of plot lines will condense in some way that'll make sense. Same thing with Stannis. We leave Stannis, his troops are cold and hungry, and he's planning the siege of Winterfell, and that's it. There's no burning of Shireen. There's no Melisandre riding off to the wall.
Okay.
That's a pretty significant difference.
I would
in
say
a
so.
Way that I can't like kind of like, oh, well, I think I they're going to, you know, it's like that's just new stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So I don't like that's kind of been a tradition. I've done it for four seasons in a row, but I am at a loss because I don't want to talk about the differences because the differences might be remixed in the major character plot lines next season.
Sure. Could be giving away inadvertent spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff that like I guess the most interesting thing at the end of this, if you grant that Sansa's probably gonna live.
Yeah.
After you've seen that the Russians on the rooftop video.
Uh-huh.
I feel like that's one of the more interesting storylines that's currently going. I mean, aside from Tyrion, obviously, who
how is my so favorite. Just her survival is interesting?
Her survival and what Littlefinger is doing. Like, because we haven't seen Littlefinger in several episodes now. Like, that's the thing that worries me, is that he is kind of off doing his thing.
Yeah.
He conspired with Olenna briefly before disappearing entirely from the show.
Yeah.
You got to wonder where he's at. You got to wonder how he's going to reconnect with Sansa, if he is. Even.
Sure.
I think Sansa, maybe her best bet is, like, head north, go to the wall where she thinks Jon is, mm-hmm. is Lord Commander. Now, John might be dead. John's probably dead. I think he's dead.
Uh-huh.
Maybe she gets up there and, you know, Melisandre has worked her magic and he's a monster at this point. And, okay. What horrors does that reap upon Sansa?
You always want to, you're wanting to go with the John comes back as a monster theory.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, sure, he could come back like Dondarrion or whatever his name is.
Or what about Dany as a comparison? You know, Dany was down and out, abandoned by all of her friends and most of her supporters, and jumped on a burning pyre, intending to commit suicide with Khal Drogo. And she emerges with three dragons and no clothes. And she's,
I don't think she died though. Like that's difference. I don't think that she died. Whereas,
but a reasonable person back, would see her and think, "Oh yes, she's dead." Like the final scene of her. Like, did you like?
Like, look at her afterwards and say, ooh, this is the ghost of
No. I'm Danny. Not saying that. I'm trying to think of what I thought when I first saw the show.
Okay.
did I believe when she went into the funeral pyre that she was coming back out? I guess that the show, because I was a show watcher only, the show did a good enough job of suggesting that she has some kind of resistance to heat that I was I kind of suspected stuff, her to come back out. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the show, they haven't shown that John can survive multiple stab wounds to the gut.
No.
They haven't like shown
not
him.
Not that I've seen.
Like, oh, he trips taking a stew and plunges a dagger inside. No, that's all right. It's it's just a wee poking. I'm fine. So, yeah. But I'd say that, you know, a person burning to death is as just as good a death as someone being stabbed and bleeding out. And yet that person came back and came out stronger and more good guy. So it's
that's the thing. I never felt like
think he's going to come back as a monster
because I felt like he's a normal person, right? Dany has been the mother of dragons for so long, and what comes along with that after the fact, I guess, is you know, being fireproof or something. I'm not totally sure yet.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's a different scenario with Dany than it is with John because I view him as just a regular dude.
Okay.
Now, if that's not the case, and if Melisandre has, you know, something up her sleeve, which she very well might.
Magic powders.
Magic, or, you know, praying to whatever god brings you back, the god of blood and tits or something,
yeah,
I don't know.
Tits and wine, that's the one.
Well, she doesn't really do wine, as far as I can tell. yeah, I don't know. So it'd be interesting if Sansa gets up there and has to, you know, maybe it's even interesting if she gets up there and Jon is resurrected and fine, you know? And like she finds out the story of we tried to kill him, we couldn't do it. And like, what does she do with that information?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like that's her best bet, right? Where does she go now?
Yeah.
Unless Littlefinger swoops in and catches her on the way down, I don't know that they're going to meet back up. Maybe Bran finds her. I mean, maybe she's lurking around the castle and they go off to do something else.
There is some awesome, and I think it's time to start getting to the feedback now, because there is a lot of awesome topics brought up by our listeners and some pretty cool, solid theories for like what Littlefinger's up to that I hadn't considered. So let's get right to it.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was, and those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim, order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar, then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon Season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, well, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R.R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, this episode, this wrap-up episode, is sponsored by Audible, the fine folks at audible.com, and you can get a free trial of their service by using our promo code and going to audiblepodcast.com/GOT to sign up and get a free audiobook download of your choice. And as I've been saying all season, they are great because they have the complete and unabridged works of George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series. And what's really cool about it is it also synchronizes with the Kindle system. So if you have a Kindle book reader, and by if you have any kind of modern tablet, Android or iOS tablet or cell phone, congratulations, you have a Kindle reader. You can read the book and it will synchronize where you stopped, and then when you get in your car or you board your airplane or you get on your yacht or you start jogging or any other type of conveyance, human locomotion. Because that's the only reason.
Do you have to be moving to,
you don't have to
make this work?
You can be laying on the beach, or you just can't you can't be in any kind of mundane situation. Who sits in a reading chair and listens to a book, for God's sakes? But if you wanted to, you still can. Wherever you get tired of reading, you can start the Audible app, and it'll automatically sync to the place where you left off and start reading from there. And that can just be this virtuous cycle of inhaling the works of George R.R. Martin.
Whisper sync.
Highly recommend it. I'm going to play for a little audio sample provided by the good folks at Audible. I'm going to play you the way John's death goes down in the books.
Okay.
It's pretty much the same. You can compare and contrast if that's kind of your thing, but here it is.
Then Bowen Marsh stood there before him, tears running down his cheeks. For the watch. He punched John in the belly. When he pulled his hand away, the dagger stayed where he had buried it. John fell to his knees. He found the dagger's hilt and wrenched it free. In the cold night air, the wound was smoking. Ghost, he whispered. Pain washed over him. Stick them with a pointy end. When the third dagger took him between the shoulder blades, he gave a grunt and fell face first into the snow. He never felt the fourth knife, only the cold.
Imagine you could have experienced that 5 years ago if you were reading the books, and you'd had the same situation us book readers, where we now have no idea what's going on and we're on the same footing and all that. But if you want to go back and get the obscure details and the hints and get on the spoilers and the theories and try to divine what's happening next, the only way you can do it is by reading the books. Audible provides a great way to do that. And it's not just George's works. There's over 185,000 complete unabridged audio works that Audible provides. And again, you can get a free sample on us by going to audiblepodcast.com/GOT, sign up for a month, and you get a free audiobook. And you can do it for whatever. Seems like the Dance of Dragons or one of the George Martin books would be a good place to start. But, They got lots of Stephen King on there.
Oh, yeah.
Name a popular author and they've got the work.
Edward Snowden. No, John Green.
The thing is, it's not on a bridge. It's heavily redacted.
It is, yeah.
It's just essentially long stretches of silence with, and or the conjunctions. Uh-huh. It's mostly conjunctions, the works of Edward Snowden, after the CIA got an
NSA. No names in his stories. No names, no places.
No dates, no identifying details of any kind for matters of operational security. But yeah, go to audiblepodcast.com/GOT and get started right now. Carson B., regarding the Stannis and Brienne scene that we debated, he says, have you all seen the movie The Patriot with Mel Gibson?
Sure.
What kind of question is that? Have I not seen a Mel Gibson action film?
I've seen a lot of them, man.
Other than Road Warrior, which is, a glaring omission, but I think it's what proves the rule. Do you remember the scene when his oldest son, Gabriel, set out to hunt down Colonel William Tavington for killing his wife in the burning church? The scene reaches its frenzied end as the two men race to reload their weapons, with Gabriel getting off the first shot and Tavington going down on his stomach. In an homage to his father's former days of scalping his enemies, Gabriel slowly approaches Tavington's lifeless body with knife in hand. As he lunges to strike, Tavington rolls over and gores him with a fucking bayonet. Mm. I think the same thing could have happened to Brienne. With sword raised high for a glorious, vengeful killing blow, Stannis lunges up with one or both of the weapons he still has in his hands and ends the story of Brienne the Night. Do we really believe Stannis going out like that? Or did he lure her into a false sense of security with, "I've resigned that I'm a dead man, just do what you need to do"? He also points out that Brienne lets out a cry as the scene is cut that many have assumed is a medieval version of the karate, "Hey-ya!" Mm-hmm. But to me, it sounded more like a startled, "Oh shit, I took a sword in the gut."
I suppose. I mean, he kind of did that to those two guys, right?
Yeah, so you... Although I will say that killing two nameless Bolton mooks is not the same as killing Brienne of Tarth.
Of course, yeah.
And, you know, she's armored, but of course there are joints and armor, and Stannis, you know, would know how to exploit those. So, I don't know. I never considered the fact that he might turn the tables and kill her. Because, to me, the reason it doesn't make sense for Jon to die is because there is an essential mystery that the books have, and the show has left dangling about his parentage and perhaps him meant for greater things. Brienne, it would be weird to kill her because I feel like thematically and narratively there is unfinished business between her and Jaime. So until her and Jaime are reunited with some kind of, I don't know what, it would be weird to kill her or Jaime off.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't know why, but for some reason that feels more plausible to me than the idea that Brienne is just going to turn around and walk away, given the opportunity to do her duty here.
Yeah.
In abandonment for some other kind of duty.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, like, what does that do if he does kill Brienne? It eliminates Brienne, and he's still a potentially mortally wounded character in the middle of hostile forces with no backup at all.
Yeah.
So...
I mean, either way, he's not going to raise another army and come back again. Yeah. You wouldn't think.
Now... if he does make some kind of attack on her that she foils, that might give her more time to consider what to do with him. You know, instead of just beheading him, she might decide what other way she could use him. I don't know. So that might be an interesting kind of smooth transition and back into that plot or to introduce it.
Yeah.
It's not Game of Thrones style to end on a action-based cliffhanger and then come back in the middle of that action. It's more Game of Thrones style to cut all the action out, and the next time you see it, like, you know,
it's just Stannis will have that happened.
Will be tied up on the back of her horse, and she'll be riding, and we'll figure out.
Or they'll never mention Stannis again, and he's dead, right? Like,
yeah, that's kind of, again, it would be shocking for me if he dies off screen and is never mentioned again.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how they constructed this finale just with so many cliffhangers, because I don't feel like it's something that Game of Thrones has ever done before.
No.
And it says to me that at least one of those characters is not dead. Yeah. I think probably the best bet is Sansa, maybe Jon, or if Jon is dead, which he certainly looks like he is quickly dying.
Yep.
I don't think there's any disputing that.
Mm-hmm.
Stabbed in the heart, you die within a minute or so, right?
Yeah.
So something is going to have to save him. There's no question about that. Something has to save Sansa if she's going to live.
Yeah.
I don't know. Clearly, someone is going to live out of that group, and some of them are going to die. I don't think they can all live. I think we'll feel cheated.
Okay. I agree. I don't think that every ball tossed in the air can be miraculously saved from smashing on the ground.
It would be ridiculous.
Yeah. But it's also... I also don't think that every one of them can smash.
I agree.
Either.
Yeah, we need one saved person out of that group, and then the rest have to die.
And from a narrative point of view, it might be useful to just have Stannis die off camera and not be mentioned again, just so we can stop saying, well, the one thing you can count on in Game of Thrones, if they pull away from the action, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
like
we didn't see him die.
If the jump scares always pay off, they don't work anymore. You got to throw in a kitten coming out of a cupboard every once in a while before you hit him with the axe murder, or else it's just like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, switch it up.
Josh S. said, "Hey guys, just listened to your podcast for the finale and caught your discussion about why the Night's Watch would kill Jon Snow when they did. And not, you know, in context, this is, why didn't they kill him outside the gates? I have a theory. Melisandre had just returned and told them that Stannis lost and everything was gone. Now Jon and Stannis got along, and Stannis believes in punishing those who break the law, even if it isn't the popular thing to do. If the members of the Watch turned on Jon when Stannis was still alive, then there was a good chance Stannis would march his army back to the wall and hang them all for treason. Now that Stannis is gone, who is there to punish them for turning on their Lord Commander? Stannis was the only king who responded to the wall when they asked for help. I like, that's actually a really good explanation for it.
Yeah.
It's fear of Stannis coming back and hanging them all that had them toe the line. As soon as they found out that Jon no longer had political cover.
Yeah.
In fact,
all right.
It makes so much sense. I can't believe it took a week for that. And then I've not seen this theory outside of the mailbag. So, blazing new trails there, Josh.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah, that is good. Carl said, is the only way to become a white to be killed by other whites or white walkers? Or can any person that was killed in the past become a white? So this is kind of like reviving this debate, and wondered if after you've seen the season again and with your zombie lore, if you had an opinion on this. He continues, my viewing and reading of the book experience is that to become a white, you have to be killed by a white or a white walker. Tormund killing Rattleshirt was pretty cool in episode 8, Hardhome. One would think he would get a cameo when the Night's King was raising the dead at the end of the episode. I can't think of any other character in the show or books who was killed by anyone but the whites or white walkers that we have seen or read about that has become a white. Characters that have not been killed by whites, Khorne Halfhand, he has had no cameo as a white, Craster, no cameo, etc. So I've also heard suggested that dead humans, you know, like what's the difference between a white and a white walker, that dead humans can become whites and live humans can become white walkers. Also, people asking, well, is every graveyard in Westeros going to be a potential army depot for the White Walkers? I like this, that you have to be directly killed by the White Walkers' armies or magic to be eligible to become a white. Because otherwise,
it solves that problem, yeah.
Yeah, but, yeah, yeah.
There's not enough info in the show.
There's not.
To even guess at that.
There is, but at least this theory is falsifiable. If we ever saw someone killed by just whatever come back as a white, then we could say this theory is not correct.
Yeah.
But it is, I think his point with Rattleshirt as well. I mean, they got that guy and the awesome get up and, you know, they had him there on the location, have him stand up in the background. The fact that he didn't is kind of, you know,
could mean something. I'm not. Totally
it's like
sure,
I get your whole absence of evidence, but that's like I think there's an in between ground.
At some point, like absence of evidence starts to become suggestive.
Yes, it's moved past an outlier and become statistically significant in itself.
But you're right. Why? Like, if that's what they wanted to show us, they certainly didn't show us that. So I just don't think they've cared to tell us yet.
All right. Do you think that's because because
they don't know?
That's the thing. Like, if Martin knows the rules and he hasn't shared this with them because there's going to be something interesting later, I'm fine with. I'm less fine with, well, I haven't even really thought it. I haven't figured it out myself. Because that starts leading down Lost and X-Files. And
it feels like the Gardner path, though, doesn't it? A little bit like, I'll consider that when I need to.
Yeah, but a gardener just doesn't take a bunch of seeds and fucking shake them up and throw them on.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you prepare the soil, you pick the seeds, you plant them in pleasing arrangements. Uh-huh. It's not as just haphazard as
certainly there's a science to gardening.
So I'm saying, like, if he doesn't have all the magical rules and the undead rules worked out in his head, then that could be troubling.
Yeah.
Because, again, that's how you get
into especially this deep into it, right?
Yeah.
Like, once you introduce a character or a new race or force or whatever these things are, I feel like you kind of have to understand them on a base level.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you're just asking for trouble.
Yeah, but he tweets shit make that scares the hell out of me on, like, the one he just posted his live journal is, oh, there's a major character that I've always known is going to have to die, but I've never figured out how to kill him, and I just realized last night the perfect way to do it.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, seriously?
He's talking about
seriously?
Himself.
Seriously? Oh, God. That got dark.
Sorry.
You're going to feel so bad. You've been doing this on podcast. It's going to bite you in the ass one of these days.
It will.
Joking about me and Martin dying is not going to end well for you, man.
Oops.
But no, I, Yeah, that scares me. It's like, really? If he's a significant major character that you haven't figured out the general fate of, and I guess maybe death is the general fate, but
yeah,
it scares me about that. Like, you know, if in season 5.A at the end of that, Vince Villigan had tweeted, "I just figured out how Walter White should end up," I'd be like, really?
Yeah.
Really? I was hoping you knew that back in season one or were working towards that. Anyway. Lori says, "I keep looking for that Mother's Mercy theme in the episode and in season, and thinking of how many final moments we saw may not be so final. They did show Bronn's experience with the antidote Tyene had around her neck in the jail scene. If you look at Tyene's neck as Bronn gets that disturbing goodbye kiss with the bad pussy, she is wearing a necklace with a tiny blue vial on it. Maybe that ear bite was the perfect distraction for an experienced pickpocket like Bronn to snatch a new way to be a hero to Myrcella."
Okay, I mean, maybe. The problem I have with that is he would have had to known that he needed it. I mean, maybe he just wants to take it for the fuck of it, but...
Well, that's... Yeah.
Like, certainly he doesn't know at that point that he needs an antidote.
Yeah.
That's the only problem I have with that. I think Bronn is probably capable.
What if she is... And here's where, like, my eyes start rolling. But I'm going to play internet advocate. What if she actually has fallen in love with Bronn?
And she told him the plan.
Has turned traitor to her, you know, family and her country, and gave him the antidote on the sly.
That's where I thought they were
going.
And
he won't know why, but he'll know, like, and then as soon as he hears that Marcel's been poisoned, we'll see, like, Bronn kick in the door and shove it down her throat, and she'll survive.
Maybe.
Another theory that I've seen popularized on the internet is Trystane, like, Doran's nobody's fool. He knows that the Vipers are all about the poison, and he's going to have, like, a doctor's little medical bag worth of antidote with him just in case they pulled something like this shit.
Yeah, I feel like that would feel more right to me.
Which then, opposite of, like, this being the shit show of you killed the princess, treachery, it would actually, you know, you can imagine Jaime would be, like, totally in on Trystane and Doran at that point.
Yeah.
So if you're trying to draw in the Lannisters close and make them, that would be a good way to do it.
I think so.
Which is the broader theory of Doran is in on it. Because some people, so like here, you remember the scene where they're saying goodbye and like Alaria is sitting there glaring at Jaime, and then Doran looks at her and gives her a nod and she goes forward and then kisses Myrcella in an inappropriate and poisonous way. Mm-hmm. People are interpreting that nod as like, do it.
Poison her, not like kiss this girl before she goes. Show some proper respect here.
I took it as like, son of a bitch, if I have to get up out of this wheelchair. And if I have to have Ario carry me over there to have you show, you know, it's that's how I saw it.
Yeah, I don't know. That's super interesting. I can't imagine that Doran would be in on it based on his, you know, fool me once, shame on me, fool me twice, shame on you sort of deal.
Oh, we have an interesting interpretation of that.
The opposite of that, Jesus.
Yeah.
That would feel really weird. Like, is he saying, like, you failed me? You failed to kill Myrcella when I wanted you to?
That's also part of the theory that you fucked up.
All of the speeches that we've seen from Doran to Alaria.
Like, Oberyn was supposed to get her vengeance. He fucked up. You and your sand snakes were supposed to abduct her. I pulled all my guards out of the palace, made it as easy as possible. You fucked that up. This is your last goddamn chance to get square with us. Now, it didn't
feel like that. And then maybe that's just the show framing it in a way that makes it
feel different than it actually is. I was going to say, that's another way different than of it saying actually is. That if they do reveal that is, it would kind of be amazing.
Yeah.
As long as it was well revealed.
Yes, that would be key. Like, it has to be revealed in a way that doesn't make me feel like I'm being lied to in last season.
It can't be the usual suspect situation. It's got to be more sixth sense.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's cool. We got some more to come on that later. Chris B says, "During your last podcast, you were debating about the confusing scenes in A House of Black and White. After watching the episode, I think the Double Ds were sending a clear message about the culture and identity of the Faceless Men. First of all, it's explained by Jaqen that it's clear that the reason Arya was blinded is because she donned the face of another before she was truly no one, thereby rendering whatever weird face magic behind the faces as poisonous."
Yeah.
"I think the twist or turnaround of Jaqen dying and then not dying was a visual representation of the true no-oneness of the Faceless Men. The symbolism behind Arya peeling face after face off of dead Jaqen reveals that no one in the House of Black and White can have a true face or identity. They're all no one and everyone. Personally, as a book reader, I found this very satisfying and telling of the culture of the Faceless Men, along with a good explanation as to why, as to the difficulty of truly becoming no one. We as viewers are left to wonder if Jaqen in the House of Black and White was even the same Jaqen from Harrenhal. Maybe it's just a standard face that many Faceless Men wear. Maybe the Waif Girl is just using that face because whomever it is enjoys playing the role of a helpless-looking little girl for newcomers. We don't know how many of them there are and who they really are, which is the whole point of the Faceless Men after all. Thoughts? Because I have a couple strong thoughts on this.
I mean, my question is, how does Arya see her own face? Unless the poison makes her hallucinate. The poison of a faceless
mask.
Yeah,
I buy that. Yeah. I buy that. But my, I guess, so if the Faceless Men are kind of like this Borg type of identity, it kind of cheapens the friendship and the relationship that she and Jaqen had. You know, if he's literally, if that's not even the same guy. Now, that could be interesting as like another floor dropping out of the moment for Arya. Mm-hmm. That like who you thought were friends and associates and all that, were they really? Sure. Like, you know, kind of another way to disassociate her from human emotions, which is kind of frightening. But
I mean, that's what it's going to take, though.
It's like, I guess it's like one of those things, like, I don't like that interpretation because I really liked her and Jaqen's friendship. But I guess if you make him a truly faceless man, there could be some interesting ramifications for that in Arya's development. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. We'll have to see. Thought it was a strong take, though. Robert P. said, hey, guys, in season 3, episode 6, when Melisandre takes Gendry from the Brotherhood, she looks Arya straight into her eyes and says, I see darkness in your eyes. It's staring back. Brown eyes, blue eyes, green eyes, eyes that will be shut forever. We will meet again. We will meet again. I may have misquoted a bit, but anyway, there's more evidence that the Red Priest can predict things based on what sounds like a Faceless Man reference.
All right. Yeah, I buy that.
Yeah, and I think back then in the spoiler section, I did talk about how I thought that was a nod to Arya becoming, you know, wearing the faces in the books. Mm-hmm. And a pretty smart kind of foreshadowing of that. And then I forgot until Robert reminded me.
Also going blind, you know? I mean, does that indicate that she is going to be blind forever? That this is not something she'll recover from?
Well, worked for Daredevil.
I know. You said that in the other cast. It's... It does. I just don't know that this is, you know, a Marvel superhero show.
Yeah. I mean, a blind woman.
It also
kicks
works
ass.
For the Kumite. So,
yeah.
Do what you're going to do without being able to see, I guess.
Right. No, I mean, like, also, I'm sure not a fan of the animated series Last Airbender.
No.
But there is a little blind girl character that is really cool. That is a lot like Arya, and that I could see parallels of that. So yeah, I mean, being blind forever does not preclude you from being a badass. In fact,
sure,
it could make for an even cooler, almost super heroic badass.
Yeah,
you know, I'm sure there's I know at least we have one blind listener, and she's probably like, it's not a fucking superpower.
Of course.
However, yeah. That does seem to be the trope. You know, your other senses are heightened, and
that's where they seem to go in fiction. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So anyway,
and it, you know, it's partially based on reality,
or maybe all blind people are superheroes and we just don't know it.
There you go.
If they weren't for blind people, the world would be even a bigger shithole than it was. They're holding the general shittiness down, their tireless crusade against injustice. Wally from Connecticut had a couple things that he wants to make predictions for.
Right.
He said, Arya and Bran are, of course, Stark siblings. We know Bran didn't get his warging abilities until he was crippled. Arya is now crippled, as in being blind. I think she is going to get warging abilities now.
Mm.
Do you see?
He's going to warg into Jaqen, take over.
Yep, not going to make some Jaqen puns.
No,
nope,
don't
all
do
right.
It.
And in fact, I'll just move on because I'm flustered.
Can you warg into someone like, as they're dying, and control their body once they're gone? Could she ward into Jon Snow and raise him up and start beating people's asses?
You know,
like, she might lose herself. I know, like, there's that whole thing, but
The only thing I can say is, as a book reader, the thought has crossed my mind of whether that such a thing is possible and whether that fits in the plot somehow. But I can't say any more than that.
All right.
So, yeah, mildly interesting theory you got there. Hadn't been able to trot that out for a couple weeks. In fact, going forward, we might have to retire mildly interesting.
When are you going to say it?
If the winds of winter don't blow until after next summer, then probably never. Never again is the answer. he also said Tyrion designed a special saddle for Bran in season one that worked very well. Tyrion has some skills as a non-conventional saddle maker. Ergo, he will design one for Daenerys to ride Drogon.
No, fuck Daenerys. Get on that thing, Tyrion. Come on. What are you doing?
Tyrion himself is a dragon rider.
Yes.
A lion riding a dragon? What the
you
fuck is
this
shit?
You make the saddle, you got to at least test it out. Am I wrong?
Yes, I think you are wrong. He literally did not test the saddle that he designed for Bran. He rode off and assumed it went as he planned.
I mean, okay. All right. If you're not going to test your products, I don't know who is.
I mean, he doesn't want to become a saddle. He doesn't want
customers.
He doesn't want to get pigeonholed as a saddle consultant. He's got, you know, you start that and you never get away from it.
That's true. I doubt his feet could reach the stirrups either.
It's support after the sales. It always bites your asses when you're talking about specialty saddles.
You're right.
Can never get away from it. he also has a wild show tinfoil theory, which he says parenthetically, I really hope isn't true. In season one, and this is a crazy one. In season one, as old Nan leaves Bran Stark's bedside, Ron Stark reminds her of many fairy tales she once told to him. And he specifically references one that the sky is blue because we all live inside the eye of a blue-eyed giant named Macumber.
Okay.
In season four, Oberyn Martell says, some believe the sky is blue because we live inside the eye of a blue-eyed giant. We now have two references to this, and as far as I can tell, everything in the show has some meaning. Well, maybe not Dorne in season five, but who knows? In the animated map in the show's intro, it's concave, i.e. having an outline or surface that curves inward like the interior of a circle or sphere, like the inside of an eyeball, perhaps? The Red Comet in season two is apparently seen in both Westeros and Essos at the same time. Apparently when it is day in Westeros, it's also day in Essos, further evidence that the whole planet is on the inside of a sphere. But is it a planet? Seasons are of different length. Years have variable meanings. It could be that the whole place is a gigantic spaceship named the Macumber. Earth has been destroyed and survivors have built a huge sublight multi-generational colony ship. Yeah. Yeah, baby. To travel to another star over thousands of years. But the passengers have forgotten that they're on a spaceship and have reverted to barbarism. I think me and Jesse from Personal Arrogance wrote this story once.
Yeah.
And if so, I'm suing George Martin.
Can you imagine the outrage? Like season seven,
like this,
they come back and it is a sci-fi show.
The snow globe from Saint Elsewhere. Uh-huh. Are you familiar? I mean, it's got nothing on that.
Nothing.
This is all just it turns into like a total balls to the wall Wachowski esque sci-fi series at the end.
Yep. Or like Battlestar Galactica, right? Like they're trying to find a new planet. This is their generational ship. It's headed out into space, looking for a new place to settle. They end up settling on what is Earth. You know, 5,000 years later.
Look, I think multi-generational colony ships are fucking fascinating.
They
are. All of the philosophical and human...
Like ethics. All sorts of
the
shit.
Impact on religion and culture and what happens if it takes literally hundreds of thousands of years to get where you're going.
Yeah.
All good. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a peanut butter and chocolate situation that I want that shit stuck on the Game of Thrones.
No, people would hate that.
Yeah.
There would be riots in the street.
Yeah, I don't know. I hope would be really funny. Well, so this is getting dark, and I apologize to George Martin in advance. But let's say George kicks the bucket before he finishes the books.
Sure.
And they hire someone else to rewrite. You know, they hire
Brandon Sanderson.
Exactly. To helm the inn, and he makes it this. And then he swears that, no, seriously, this was George's plans. Would anyone believe him?
No, they wouldn't. Of course not.
He would
not
be the most reviled man in history. I'm just doing
like,
my
can
duty.
You imagine the reaction that he would have reading the script for the first time?
If you were
be fucking kidding me. I can't write this.
If you were Sanderson, would you stay true to his outline? Or would you, if you were the only person that knew.
Oh, my God.
Would you stay true to his outline or would you rewrite?
No, I would rewrite. I would definitely rewrite. Because you're right. There's no good way out of that scenario without rewriting.
Good God. Yeah, that would be hilarious.
You'd be a laughingstock for the rest of your life.
So I'm with you, Wally. Let's hope that doesn't come to pass.
Yeah.
TGI says in the episode of Lady Olenna and Littlefinger. Ooh, this is a good one. and Lady Olenna and Littlefinger's meeting, he promises to deliver a handsome young man or something to that effect. Aeron has been lamenting Doran's lack of a grand scheme, but in the books his scheme goes unspoken for a long time. What if sending Trystane to King's Landing to sit on a small council is part of a master collaboration between Doran and Littlefinger?
Hmm.
I don't know where it leads now that Alara has evidently murdered Myrcella. Any chance that they turn tail back to Doran, snitch to Doran, and get an antidote in time to save her life? Would have been interested where to, or to see an, where an alliance between two great schemers in the books would have ended up. Okay. So let's freestyle on this a little bit.
Okay.
If there is a triumvirate of Littlefinger, Doran, and Olenna,
mm-hmm.
Doran supplies the prince. Olenna has the princess. Littlefinger maneuvers the Lannisters so they're completely destroyed. You would still, and Tommen gets killed. Myrcella is still the rightful queen. The people love her, especially if she comes through this scandal with any kind of grace and dignity. She marries Trystane. Now Dorne and Tyrell share a rule of the I almost said Wild Kingdom, of the Seven Kingdoms, with Littlefinger having brokered that peace. Maybe he's the hand now. Would that feel like an epic reveal of a Dornish plan, and also have Littlefinger kind of there as a pivotal member of it?
I think so. I think it's, you know, once again, one of those things where it depends on how they reveal that.
Right.
And
you got the complication is now you've got everyone said that Cersei is weak, you know, and she's looked very weak. But now you got Kevin back and you got the mountain on her side.
Mm-hmm.
So suddenly the Lannisters aren't as non-formidable as they appeared middle of this season, say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder how much of that Littlefinger would be onto.
Hmm.
Probably a lot of it, I'd imagine. But
the thing is like, I don't know that Littlefinger knows about the mountain. How would he? Varys was gone. He was out of the capital. It's Qyburn's the new master of secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't know a lot about the inner workings of what's going on with that. So that could be a potential miscalculation on his part.
It definitely could be. I don't know. It really depends on how they do it. Because we already have speculated, you know, Dorne's got to have something up his sleeve, right?
Yeah, you would think.
Otherwise, what the hell?
Right.
Why are you giving away your prince?
Yep.
So I don't know. They would have to add a layer to it, I feel.
Yeah.
And maybe Littlefinger working with him would be enough. But
that's the other thing is Myrcella dying. How does Trystane survive the King's Landing? To be Hand of the King, if
Myrcella dies.
Now if he has an antidote and cures her, then how do they get her out of the way so that he can marry Margaery? Because I'm assuming the Tyrells are mixed up because they'd almost have to be. You know, if the Dorne just came to supplant them on the Iron Throne, they would have to side with the Lannisters.
It also might be interesting if they're not involved and they're pissed and they pull their support from King's Landing. And Littlefinger and Doran and Trystane have to figure
that's
out.
That's still choosing a side, pulling your support away from one rival to let another smash them.
But I thought you meant involved in the throne in whatever respect.
But
could literally just be that Margaery and Loras are going to be killed, and Lady Olenna is going to be pissed about it and do what she threatened to do.
But again,
which causes
Littlefinger promised her
problems.
A handsome young man. Trystane is a handsome young man.
It's true. It's true. I guess. I don't know, man. I don't know.
The other candidates for this handsome young man could be Gendry, the long-lost Baratheon bastard that he could somehow be proof of the incestual nature of the Lannisters' claim to the throne.
Ramsay? I don't think that Littlefinger would do that.
And also, he's why would Lady Olenna give a shit? That's the thing, because it's in context of this is meaningful to Lady Olenna.
Yeah, what I'm saying is like it could be he would help the Boltons come into King's Landing, take over, get rid of the Lannisters.
I don't know that she would see, but again, that's somehow for Lady Olenna to be with it. Myrcella or not, I'm not Myrcella.
Margaery.
Margaery still has to be sitting on the throne, or perhaps
I think you're right, yeah,
or perhaps. You know, Loras, but it seems like Margaery's the one already sitting there. However, for the Tyrells to be engaged, the end game has to be they have to have the same amount of influence.
Yeah.
If they get cut out, then why would they go along with it? So I don't know. That that has me a little bit.
And their children can't be for forfeit either, right?
Yeah, right.
There's no way they'll go along with.
No.
Well, it's going to cost you a daughter and a son, but or yes. a granddaughter and grandson.
I don't
whatever,
think
but
a Lady Olenna would set for that.
No, right? No.
But no, those are some interesting ways they could go.
Yeah.
Still kind of wish, I don't know why they just didn't get with that this season.
I don't know. I think it's interesting that Littlefinger is out there somewhere doing his Littlefinger
stuff.
He's
like the shark.
Yeah.
In Jaws.
We haven't even seen his fin, though. It's like...
Haven't even heard the mute.
No.
Yeah, it's been a while. William I, this speculation centers around the death of Jon Snow and how the wildlings south of the wall will eventually find out, and the King's, or the Night's Watch, will fear any retaliation for killing the guy who saved the wildlings' lives. He's got three options. I want to see what you think of them. Option one, the show just doesn't go to the wall next season. He judges this as not likely. The season span, you know, for a lot of different reasons.
Okay.
They're not going to brand the death of Jon.
I agree with you, yeah.
Okay. Option two, the Night's Watch report that a rogue brother killed Snow because he did not agree with the Snow's treatment of the wildlings. They offer up Jon Snow's body and the body of the assassin Black Brother, who was quote-unquote killed during the arrest. And that could be...
Ollie.
Well, I was actually thinking if they're going to go that route, like Ed, you know, one of the few okay. John supporters, they could just put the knife in his hand. Anyway, they give him up to appease the wildlings, and the bodies are burned in a funeral ceremony, which would slam the door on Jon Snow coming back. Option three, Melisandre starts up her witchy ways and steals Jon Snow's body out of Castle Black, perhaps with Davos's help. The show rides on the recent Benjen Stark reminder by having Alistair Thorne report to the wildlings that Jon Snow's actually gone north of the wall to look for his uncle, who he just got new information about, and that's why he's not here. I'm just acting Lord Commander. They can then send the brothers out to look for Melisandre, hoping to get Jon's body back. If not, they can conveniently report after a while that Jon Snow must have died looking for his uncle north of the wall. The problem with the fate of Jon Snow is they cannot go a whole season without committing to some kind of resolution. They can start out at the funeral like they did at Tywin and burn the body. This will confirm once and for all that he is dead. Or if there's some kind of plotline involving a missing body or plans to take the body or an unusual delay in having a funeral for some reason, then you know they wouldn't do that unless Jon Snow is coming back. So his theory is unless Jon Snow's body is burnt or permanently dealt with by episode two of next year, you know he's coming back.
I feel like he's probably right on that.
All right. Yeah, the longer it goes with that being resolved, the more likely it is that he's coming back.
Yeah, because frankly, it feels like with Stannis, they could just kind of never mention him again, except in passing. But with Jon Snow, I don't think you can get away with that.
Yeah, I don't even know if you can get away with Stannis, honestly. He's a little bit, after this season, he's become too prominent of a character. Like, they could have done that last season, but bringing him back and having the scene with his daughter and him burning his daughter, I think, is permanently etched his identity and even the most casual show watch. He's the daughter burner, man.
Yeah, I mean, I agree he became a bigger part of the show, but I think also, in my mind, his fate is sealed at that moment.
Yep.
And so if they just, like, close that envelope totally, I would be fine with that.
Okay.
Whereas that's not the case with Jon Snow. I kind of want... I kind of feel like there's more to his story than we've seen.
Okay. Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, if very special isn't your speed, we've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
So Cassie B writes in and she kind of rehashes the potential Doran and Ellaria are working together poison plotline.
Okay.
And she began to wonder, didn't Jaime and Bronn arrive in Doran via hitching a ride in secret and not by a Royal Navy vessel? If so, there wouldn't have been a King's Landing ship there to pick them up and take them home. So does that mean they're returning home on a Dornish ship, presumably manned by Dornish soldiers?
I assume so, yeah.
If that is the case and Doran is in on the plan, it wouldn't be stupid to have Trystane riding along since Doran's men are actually in control of the ship. After all, it would be Jaime and Bronn against an entire ship of Dornish sailors. I thought that maybe when Doran told Ellaria that he believed in second chances but not third ones, this perhaps was him actually referring to King's Landing. Meaning that sending his own sister Aelia was the first chance. She was killed. Secondly, sending his brother Oberyn was also killed, although it was during a trial by combat. And now he refuses to give the crown a third chance to any alliance with his country. That's a different take than the whole Oberyn, yeah. Alara third strike situation we already talked about.
Sure. I don't know. That's an interesting wrinkle. The idea that it must be a Dornish ship.
Because, yeah, it's not as big a risk sending your prince on a Dornish ship than it is. And I'm not sure why I didn't assume that it wasn't a Dornish ship, because...
I mean, I suppose it doesn't have to be a Dornish ship.
I don't think
ship.
The Royal Navy has an Uber service.
Probably not, but, like, I don't know. I suppose there are ways around it being a Dornish ship, but they're all kind of contrived.
Yeah.
The idea that, oh, maybe they were holding Jaime and they contacted King's Landing and... King's Landing sent a ship. Like, that all seems very... That seems like a little too much twisting in the wind to get there.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I don't know. Like, he kills Marcella on the boat. And then what? What do they do with Jaime? Do they take him back to King's Landing? Assume this all plays out how you want it to, Doran. What next?
Yeah, you take him to King's Landing, and either Trystane stays on the boat... and moons everybody from shore, or he gets off, and now the reverse. It's still you've thrown your son into the den of the
lions. Or you take Jaime somewhere else, like as a hostage. What?
Now that's an interesting.
But why not just keep him in Doran?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, maybe
are they trying to absolve themselves from responsibility? Like, unless we don't know where Jaime is.
Unless you've got some other mission you need him to do.
What do you mean? Who would have that other mission? And why would he do anything for the people who just killed his daughter?
I don't know. But if let's start remixing these theories. This will be fun.
Okay.
Okay. So we think Tommen might die.
Uh-huh.
If we weave all these plots together. So Tommen's dead. Cersei's disgraced and humiliated. And more importantly, admitted to incest with Lancel.
Mm-hmm.
Which is going to be a blow to Jaime, who thinks she's the love of his life.
Okay.
So Jaime gets this news on the ship, and Doran knows it's all coming somehow because he's orchestrated this with Littlefinger.
Sure, yeah.
Is it possible that Jaime would turn traitor against his whole family because he was spurned, and perhaps he goes on some kind of undercover mission to...
Like, what family?
Unite, huh?
What family at this point? Like... what, Kevin, I guess.
Well, I mean, it would
like
be him and
if
his sister.
If he's angry at Cersei for, you know, not being the love of his life or whatever.
And also Tommen dying.
Tommen's
somehow.
Dead. Like,
Cersei's rampaging with the mountain and acting
selfish.
The
Lannister family is getting pretty small.
That's
he
what I'm
hates
saying.
Tyrion,
so
like,
if Jaime can... Would, yeah. is I'm trying to think of what a mission that Doran would give Jaime mm-hmm. that would be interesting and that only uniquely Jaime could serve. Maybe Jaime's purpose will be to unite the Lannisters behind this Dornish scheme. Like, Lannisters need new management.
Just, like, if you're gonna
I am
ask...
the fucking heir, and I'm taking control of this ship. And now the Lannisters are good guys. We've all forgotten I shoved the kid out of a tower window in season one.
If you, so let's
at my gold hand.
You need something from me, right? You're yeah. like, look, I need you to take me to the airport tomorrow. You come to my house and before you ask me, you smash my television with a sledgehammer.
Okay.
The answer is no. I'm sorry. The answer is fuck you. No.
But what if the other guy filled your car full of cement? That's worse than smashing your television.
So I need you to take me to this guy's house so I can beat him up, and then you come in, smash my TV, and I say yes because the
at
guy
least,
filled my car
at
with
least
cement.
You didn't fill my car full of cement. You could have been a bigger turd.
Maybe.
All right. enough imagination land. Let's take the trolley back to Mr. Rogers' apartment now.
Good.
Tom B has a couple questions for us. One, this is a what if. I'm not sure if you're going to be super interested in it. What if Stannis said no to Brienne? Before executing Stannis, she asked if he really killed Renly.
Like Neo? He stops the sword?
No.
Oh, okay.
What if he said, no, I had nothing to do with it. Somebody used magic to put my face on a shadow.
Oh.
Would the somewhat naive and dopey Brienne have stayed her execution? Would she have then helped escort Stannis to safety if he'd asked or commanded her to do so?
Hmm.
I say no. I don't think she's this naive or stupid. And also, Stannis is not the type to just lie to save his skin, I don't think.
Yeah, you're probably right on both counts.
All right.
I think Brienne, she lays out the case to him, you know, like this shadow had your face. I know you're using blood magic. That's it. Off with your head.
Yeah. Why was the mountain just standing there waiting? If he was all ready to go, all suited up in nice new armor, why didn't he just plow through the Faith Militant and rescue Cersei earlier? Why let her rot in a cell? Why let her endure the entire walk of shame? You have any ideas?
I felt like Qyburn was holding the mountain back as like... Mm. You know, a grand reveal, a gift sort of thing for Cersei when
for
she
the
gets
season
back.
Finale. In other
well,
words.
Yeah.
I think
number one, it's a TV show.
I think they put enough suggestion that this is like something he just got finished with.
I thought so too. Yeah.
Because even like two episodes ago, he told her the work is progressing. Mm-hmm. So he it seemed like he was working on him throughout the season. So it could be that he literally got the bolts in the neck tightened up just that morning. You know.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really Qyburn's place to say, let's go rampage, right?
Right. Yeah.
Like, what if that's not what Cersei wants to do? She's got another plan. It seems like that's a dangerous thing to just do.
Do you think Qyburn respects Cersei? Or he sees her as someone he can manipulate
and
use?
That's a good question.
It's essentially the same question of asking, do you think Qyburn is a shrewd individual? I kind of think he is.
Seems like it. He's got some
so my default
eyes.
Position on all things is he's using Cersei somehow, and then I don't have a problem with him manipulating the timing of the mountain reveal for his own interests. Because you got to think, like, who's the mountain going to be ultimately loyal to? Cersei Lannister or his creator?
Dr. Frankenstein.
Although I guess if it's like in the books, then that's a dicey proposition that the monster might hate his creator.
Yeah, I mean, even in the Frankenstein books.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, those books. Okay,
yeah,
I thought you meant the Game of Thrones.
Creator loyalty is not necessarily a given when you're talking about Frankenstein monsters.
For sure.
Shum wrote in and says, how many of your concerns or problems with this season could have been potentially resolved with a 13-episode season? This is the why don't we get more Game of Thrones argument. The con is that the Double D's have said, we pretty much make Game of Thrones year-round already. Between pre-production, production, and post-production, we literally couldn't do more weeks of shooting and still be able to get the thing turned around. I don't know that I buy that, but I also don't know that I feel like that it was the pacing that was the problem already, and stretching this plot over three more episodes. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure that would solve it. Because I also said that this show was a curious mix of dragging its feet and rushing. So maybe extra episodes would allow them to more fully develop some of the stuff. But on the other hand, there's that middle section of the season where just it felt like we were waiting for things to get traction again. I was just watching a four-wheeler spin its wheels in mud, and three more episodes of that is not helping anybody.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like maybe just switching what they're showing most often around would have helped a little bit. Like,
yeah,
I mean, I get that the road show was entertaining, but Stannis' setup was pretty bad as far as his troops freezing in the winter snow. I feel like maybe that if they had focused a little more on why it was so urgent for Stannis to do what he was doing and all that stuff, it might have felt a little better for me.
All right,
less on Stan snakes, maybe.
Yeah. He had another suggestion, because in the books, Feast is essentially everything that happens in Westeros, and then simultaneously Dance is happening, which is mostly things that are happening in Essos. Huh, he's suggesting that what if they had done a more straightforward conversion where season 5 follows half of the characters, and then season 6 follows the other half, and you let all these plots kind of fully develop and do them more just kind of how the book does them. Which
I'm all for doing it how the book does it. Like, I know these are kind of your least favorite books or whatever.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah.
And I haven't read them, so I'm taking your word on that. I feel like you can never go wrong when people already love the source material.
Yeah.
By just following the source material.
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, Shum here acknowledges that you got a lot of problems, which is you're sidelining a lot of characters under contract.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Which is,
if I don't get to see Tyrion for an entire season, I'm going to be less than thrilled.
Well, that's essentially the Aeron experience of Feast for Crows. Where the fuck is Tyrion? God damn it. So that's the same, you know, I remember in high school reading Lord of the Rings, and I'm like, all right, this fellowship's pretty good. Council Elrond is rough, but I'm involved. And then I get to the next book, and I'm like, seriously? I'm not going to find out what happened to the other dudes until I get done with this thing? Like, I got, like, it's bullshit. Huh. I hated it, and I kind of feel like that was part of my problem with Feast and Dance. I don't like that narrative device of pulling out characters by location or setting and then resolving all that stuff at once and then doing the other and then bringing them together at the end. I much prefer being engaged in both plots simultaneously.
Okay, here's my question then. Which did you enjoy more, the books or the way the TV show did it? Because those are two separate approaches.
Oh, no, I definitely, so far from what I've seen, prefer the books. Because
so that's not as big a problem as trying to do it all
because
at once
succeeding. There was some meandering and there was some stuff that got, I think, drug on, and it was annoying not getting to having to accept new characters I didn't care about at the expense of not getting any information at all in the characters that I was caring about. But having said that, I think they should have took their time. But, you know, the other thing about this negative stuff is I remember being disturbed at some of the adaptations they made in season 2, especially with the Dannys, like, where's my dragons and the ultimate.
They were super minor, weren't they?
Well, in this grand scheme of things, but then also just the payoff of her duel with the wizards or the warlocks of Karth was so much lamer than it was in the books. And Jon Snow's adventures with Corran Halfhand were dumber. And I'm like, this is kind of... But what they were able to do is position it by the end of the season to where I'm like, okay, I see now the shape of things. And I see how this is going to allow them to adapt the next season. So I was kind of okay with it. Mm-hmm. Whereas I don't have that safety net in this season. All I can see is them being in the middle of rearranging the deck chairs. And I don't know where they're going. So I don't know if this is a good arrangement or a bad one. So part of me saying that this is a dissatisfying season just could be from that point. But I feel like enough show watchers say also this isn't as good, that there is it's also just structurally and kind of, you know, objectively not as good and not as entertaining as previous seasons.
Yeah. And one more time, that's compared to previous seasons, not television as a whole.
Sure. Sure.
Still a really good show.
So he also compiled a long list of significant book deviations throughout the season, which I've gone through over the seasons.
Might help you in your... Are you doing a recap? Or did you say at the beginning you're not, definitively?
I'm not. And I don't have time to read all this stuff, but essentially, the thing he communicates is as the books go further into the series, the changes become long, the list of changes become longer, and the deviations become more severe. He says, with these in mind, you know, that's one thing I said in the beginning of the season. I'll have a more gut comfort level with them going forward with The Winds of Winter and A Dream of Spring, not having those books to guide them if this season's pretty good. So he's basically asking me, with these in mind, how do you guys rate the Double D's ability to come up with material without the aid of Gurm's books? I would say I'm not very confident. I'm worried. I'm officially worried.
Yeah. You know, I mean, this season, like, there have certainly been worse seasons of shows that we've covered.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you want to talk about bad seasons, there have been a couple in The Walking Dead where we were like,
not sure we're even
going to
keep doing this.
You know, I don't even know if we want to do this show next year.
There was like three podcasts that gave up podcasting on Game of Thrones this season.
That has never crossed our mind, right? No, like, the show is still so good.
Sure.
We're not going to, like, they're not even in the same league as far as
Hard Home alone was almost worth the price of admission all by itself.
Yeah.
It was like I have not seen anything like it thus far of this year in television. And that means something as much television as I watch.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'll even put it up against anything I saw in The Avengers.
Banshee. Banshee's more like one-on-one stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just really, really great piece of cinema. And I'm glad I got to watch it.
Yeah. I wonder if there's like a little bit of them rearranging the deck because they don't have the confidence that George Martin's going to deliver a book, and they don't want to try to tell the knot that he's got himself into. You know, like man, I don't know how we're going to tell. Like, going judging on where the books have ended,
yeah,
I don't know how to tell this story going forward. So let's rearrange the show to a story that we know we can tell.
Yeah,
if he comes out with the book, we'll try to veer it back on course, but let's make something that's ours now.
Well, that's what I was hoping. And three episodes in, that was kind of my position. Like, okay, you take out two Kingsguards that I don't give a shit about and Dorne, and you throw in Jaime and Bronn. That's a pretty smart change.
I like it, yeah.
I like it. Putting Sansa in the middle of action in Winterfell and accelerating her story. I like that. There's a lot of changes like that that I was kind of like, oh, getting Tyrion to Jorah faster and getting than both of Danny faster. That's a potentially good change. But then I felt like they didn't follow through with it. Like, if you're going to remix stuff, then fucking remix it, man. Like, I feel like that they did this weird middle path of,
that's what I mean, yeah,
streamlining consolidation, but we still have to make sure these guys hit the major beats, even if those beats no longer made sense in the remix story, which is the classic Kirkman problem, by the way, too.
Sure.
Like, this situation that worked very early on in the fucking comic book, I'm going to throw in season 5, but these characters should not react in the situation the same way that the characters from, like, issue 80 characters shouldn't react to the situation the same as issue 20 characters.
So now you're left with either, let's have the reaction be totally different
in
the same scenario that the book readers are familiar with, or let's have the reaction be the same and it won't fit with the characters who are now in the show, right?
And like, that's the thing.
That's a weird...
And that's where they got themselves in trouble, by having these characters hit the same beats and have broadly the same reactions to them. It felt like, you know, and that goes with Stannis double, because, you know, that's something that we don't even know what's going on in the books. Like, wow, you know, this doesn't feel like it's hanging together.
Yeah. And I mean, I'll say, you know, just as a show watcher only, that even if you throw all that stuff out, like, oh man, this doesn't match up with the books, I'm feeling weird about that, I'm uneasy. Like, this season is still the weakest, in my opinion, and doesn't hold together quite as well as I felt like it should have.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the stuff they're doing is really interesting and cool. This stuff with Stannis, I felt like would have worked so much better if we were just given a little more information scenario-wise about what he's facing. Stuff with, like, the Sand Snakes was interesting, like, on at the base level, but it just, like, they just didn't execute it on, like, a level that I felt super engaged by.
No, it reminds me of...
Like, this premise and the setup is all really good. It's like, there's just small tweaks they should have made.
Staging, like, more snow.
More snow.
Skinnier soldiers.
Bodies being piled, skinnier soldiers.
Yeah, it's kind of like in...
People eating horses, like, all that stuff.
Season 2 of Walking Dead, the premiere, had that really awesome, like, mass zombie horde taking over the freeway.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But they staged it in such a way that the character should have seen the mob coming miles and miles away.
Yeah.
So it visually just like, this is ridiculous. And that's kind of how I felt like this Stannis plot would have worked with another episode of Tour of Desperation, deeper snow, more, you know, harsher winds and skinnier soldiers,
yeah,
and an increasingly haggard looking Stannis at his wit's end. As it was, it's kind of like, you know, we got 6 inches of snow. It's time to call
that's
off school and burn my daughter.
Or maybe like make it more severe at the wall, right?
Yeah.
Because what the fuck? It didn't even look that deep at the wall.
No.
So hundreds of, or I don't even know how many miles south, but
right,
50 minimum?
Sure.
100 miles south, you're going to have less snow than a place that doesn't look like it has all that much snow to begin with.
Ryan N. Oh, wait. There's one last thing Shum wanted us. Favorite characters at this point. I'm pretty sure Jim is on record of saying Tyrion is his favorite, but I don't think Aeron has ever said. No, totally. Tyrion is what makes the series for me.
Yeah.
And that's why
we were all questioning, like, could they kill Tyrion, like, a couple of seasons ago, weren't we?
Yeah.
Like, not on this podcast, but just, like, talking. Like, can the show survive the death of Tyrion?
Yeah. Well, I know, just talking to you, it's like we were talking about you potentially reading the books. And I'm like, I don't know, you'd make it through Feast or Dance, but I actually think you would really dig, you know, Clash of King and Storm of Swords, because that's like Tyrion at his pimpest.
Are those like 2 and 3?
Yeah. And also, like, if you think he was really good in season 2, he's twice as good in the books.
Damn.
Like,
Damn.
And I was disappointed they didn't make some of his more clever moments into the scene. But yeah, so I could see, like, if you're a Tyrion fan, the first 3 books are like mother's milk. And nice. you get the feast, we'll see what happens. But Ryan N, controversial suggestion. I'm starting to think Martin should just give up on writing the books for now and focus on helping write for the show, because I think it needs help. Plus, he certainly likes to take a long time with his books. Maybe that's part of what makes them so good. If he rushes them now, they might suffer. I prefer that he give his full energy to the show and then finish the books whenever he damn well pleases. It could be the final book comes out in 10 years, so by then we might all enjoy a nostalgic return to Westeros. What do you think? Should he focus on making the show great rather than try to ramrod the books ASAP with the double D's freewheeling on the show? Or should we keep on same on same? What, do you have an opinion on that?
I mean, what he's effectively saying is I want a season of this show once every 3 years. Like, because that's what would happen, right? Like, I'm George Martin. I write slow. And now that I'm taking over, we're going to write slow.
I don't know if that's true, or if just like having him on the set, chained to the set, where the in the writer's room, where he could just be a jukebox for plot points and answers. That,
yeah, like people are writing around him.
Yeah.
And he's just saying, no, no, that doesn't work, and here's why.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe.
I will say that I think book readers would pull a Nick Cage and piss blood.
Doesn't matter.
If this was,
doesn't matter. Game of Thrones, the show, is such a
now they
hit
are
the
pissing blood and shit of you suggesting that they don't matter.
I'm not saying they don't matter. Just
no,
the
I
show
know.
Is so much bigger.
I know, it's the same. Like this, what, you know, Walking Dead fans bristle at the fact that they are such a small percentage of the actual fan base, but it's true.
It is true.
And yeah. I'm here to represent the book readers. I gotta say that I would think this is some bullshit.
Yeah,
but. If it avoids the worst of both worlds, where I get a shitty show and a rushed shitty product of the books, I would prefer it.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, HBO is not going to shut down production. Like the best thing probably would be load all the actors into a cryo sleep, shelve this series for another 5 years, and let George get the damn thing done.
Yeah.
You know, short of inventing a time machine and going back and lighting a fire under George's asses 7 years ago. Asses. He has multiple asses.
By now, I'm sure.
That's pretty accurate. I don't know. I can't imagine the PR disaster it would be, because there is something to say that you might not be the biggest numerically, but you got to have your core nucleus, passionate fan base, or
yes,
the others
yes.
will wither and die.
I agree, yeah.
So, because there's what's keeping the interest alive, you know? Mm-hmm. So, anyway, moving on, Karen P. Do you think the many deaths, this is starting, I put off all the critical stuff to the end, because people might be inclined to shut off the podcast, and I don't want them to miss all the fun stuff. We're heading into that territory. What went wrong?
Okay.
Karen P. says, do you think the many deaths on the show have lost their novelty just because of the sheer quantity that has happened? I know at the start of the show, Ned's death and the Red Wedding and even the Purple Wedding came to us as shockers because you don't usually expect the good characters to die, especially the ones that have been built for up from a whole season's perspective. Ned and Rob are both given so much importance before the deaths. I do believe it has become a sort of trend on the show. I was thoroughly expecting John to die after this season when he was made Lord Commander, but thought otherwise when he didn't die beyond the wall. I'm starting to feel these deaths are more for shock value than actual story progression. That's the catch,
right?
That's
a problem.
If you have shocking death after shocking death, then shocking deaths start to become boring.
Yeah.
Which is the worst, I think is personally that the worst crime this show can commit is to become boring and predictable.
I agree. Yeah. I have to question whether or not that's intentional. Is that part of what Martin is trying to say? This world is a place where, you know, people have adapted to this lifestyle, to the horrors of this time period.
This is
what you get.
But
and are we as an audience supposed to adapt to that and start saying, like, get used to it, and then something will change to make us go, oh no, I've gotten used to this. What am I doing?
But then does it serve some other narrative purpose? Like, if next season's the turning point and the good guys start slowly but surely winning, and this is the darkest hour, okay, fine. But if this is going, you know, if like the debate we had is what is Martin playing at? Is if this is just a bleak kick in the crotch after kick in the crotch until the thing's over and the world's a shithole and it never gets better, what is the point of that? Like, even if you think
you need a good character lamenting that fact, though, you need someone standing in that world to say this is fucked, and the audience needs to identify with them in a way where they can step back and say, oh yeah, this is fucked, and I've gotten used to it.
I don't know. I think sometimes
I don't think that's what they're doing.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to go somewhere with it.
Right. And I know a lot of people like accuse season one of True Detective as essentially being that.
Okay.
Like the world's miserable and shitty, but you know, you find your wins where you can take them. But I don't know. I feel like that seems edgy and cool to like a high school literature. You know, he's in the accelerated literature programs. Like, I know, I'll write a story where it's just like the real world and nothing good ever happens. And I think that's that's not even a really good take on the real world either.
No, certainly.
So I think that would be boorish and dumb if that's the road he's going down.
Okay.
But there again, supposedly we only have two seasons left to go. So we have to start getting some wins. They can be hard fought, victories that might cost the good guys as much. You know, if you go back to that Nisa theory and the how Lightbringer was born, there could be a lot of like tough sacrifices. A lot of good people die, but it's got to go somewhere good, or else what the hell's the point?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see.
Rachel S. has some thoughts on what the season did wrong. Having had about a week to think about it and having listened to an infinite number of hours of podcasts during the season, I think I've reached some conclusions about why the fifth season of Game of Thrones is so disappointing, at least for me. I'll still watch the show and all that jazz, but this season was not great, Bob. I think the presentation of chronology and the passage of time in the season has been terrible. We have no sense of whether events are happening simultaneously or how far apart they are occurring, and that's important to understand in terms of character motivation and story development. Has Arya been training for 3 days or 3 months? Little Sam looks like he's still a newborn. How long has Brienne been watching that tower? Did things in King's Landing happen so quickly that a raven couldn't get to Dorne to tell Jaime that Cersei was locked up? Does Littlefinger travel by portkey? This issue reveals itself in a couple storylines significantly relative to one another. One, Stannis is presented as a person who has lived on rats and onions for a very long time during the Siege of Storm's End, so you'd think that it would have taken a similar period in the show to leave him so desperate as to burn his daughter alive. And two, time must not have passed in the same way at the wall, because Jon Snow must have only been back from Hardhome for a few hours. Otherwise, he would presumably have immediately told all of his black brothers and sent ravens to every house imaginable, warning them of the real and imminent threat of the White Walkers following his experience at Hardhome, and been backed up by the other black brothers who were there and survived, meaning his people wouldn't have mutinied and killed him. Yes, the passage of time is starting to become very weird, with Myrcella saying that she's been down at Dorne for years, and also that's about the same time that that Gilly has given birth to her son. Like, there is some weird shit going on at the time.
Yeah, I think I said in an earlier episode that I thought that these things were not going on simultaneously, but I couldn't have told you when each thing was happening. And I still feel that way at the end.
Well, that's bad, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's totally bad. She's completely right about that.
There's always, I think the great shows always have some way to kind of keep everything chronologically bound together. Mm-hmm. And Game of Thrones is starting to feel unhinged, where it that maybe not bother you at first glance, but it's kind of like one of those nagging subconscious things that's not allowing you to fully immerse into,
yeah,
get your suspension really of disbelief going. She also says, I think Hardhome was certainly one of the best set pieces in Game of Thrones history, was a mistake. And the reason that it was awesome is also in turn what makes it so bad for the story. Almost every recapper and podcaster has noticed that it's hard to care about the ongoing struggles for the throne and Meereen and the intra and inter-family squabbles when the threat of the White Walkers became very real very quickly. The books, this is handled better, making the White Walkers more of a myth than reality and making Hardhome just a story told through a game of telephone rather than something in which important characters took part. George Martin, as promised, will go further into the lands north of the Wall in the Winds of Winter, and I think a slow burn will help us continue to care about other book plot lines rather than making them seem completely insignificant relative to this looming threat. And that is another thing that I'm kind of scared about, that pulling all this material with the White Walkers and their threat earlier into the books or earlier into the series is going to... You know, are they just going to go away for another season like they did after the battle of the Fist of the First Men? I don't think that works.
How fast do spiders travel?
Depends on the spider.
Okay. Fair enough.
An unladen ice spider can travel like, you know, 12, 15 miles an hour tops. Yeah. Kilometers, maybe. I that's a big problem. Because there's a lot of this intra-family squabbling that doesn't really mount to a hill of the beans in the grand story that still has to take place. But we also have a very ticking time bomb north of the Wall. And how are those two stories going to come together? Like, is it going to feel okay for you for some of that stuff to just be put on hold? Like, literally, like if Dorne and the Tyrells... and the Knights of the Vale and the Boltons and the Lannisters are all poised for another Battle of the Five Kings, and it's canceled due to the war north of the Wall. Like, would that be interesting to see that subterfuge and intrigue just put on hold or put aside indefinitely? Or does that need to be wrapped up before we get to the White Walkers?
I feel like maybe it could be wrapped up before... the White Walkers, you know, do an all-out assault on the Seven Kingdoms. But I don't know. There's also an interesting aspect of, like, who's on the throne and what did they want to do about the White Walkers, right? Like, if Jon Snow runs down there and he tells Cersei, White Walkers are coming. I've seen them. They attacked Hardhome. They've got a bunch of troops. Does she take them seriously? Does she unite the kingdoms in the way that she would need to in order for them to fight off a force like this?
Yeah.
What happens if Trystane's on the throne? What happens if...
Yeah.
Danny's on the throne. Like, those are very different reactions from those different people, right?
Sure.
So, like, maybe that's part of the tension. Like, who will be in the position to do something about this when the time comes?
Mm-hmm.
I think that could be interesting. Like, if I don't know, I see, like, people who are maybe more concerned with their own affairs not being able to combat this and join everybody like a Mance Rayder did or something.
Yeah, I also hope it's not. Because the classic solution to all these dilemmas where you have an under-equipped foe fighting this large, massive invasion that they have no business winning is some kind of bullshit Deus Ex Machina. Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like that fucking Matthew McConaughey, Christian Bale dragon movie.
Reign of Fire.
Reign of Fire. Yeah. There's one male dragon that if you kill them, all the other dragons essentially die off. It's the mothership of Independence Day.
Exactly.
If you take Jeff Goldblum and a MacBook Pro.
And a couple cigars.
You can destroy the entire, it's the droid army in Naboo. Like, you take out the one. And, like, goddamn it, if Jon Snow stabs the Night's King and all the whites and White Walkers shatter into glass, I'm going to be so pissed. But because
you have to say, man, that army is fucking dumb for putting all their important pieces in one spot.
Yeah.
Right? But okay, what if it's like a two-pronged attack? Like, Bran comes down with his fireball children from the north, sneaks up behind him, takes out some of the White Walkers, and then Jon takes out, you know, Jon or like The throne. I'm coming around on this theory where the throne is actually made of Valyrian steel now.
Okay. Okay.
Because you know if dragons made it.
Okay.
I think it'd be fucking cool if that was melted down and like final stand at King's Landing.
Yeah.
Protecting all of the South, which is kind of the part that we care about.
You've got Valyrian steel. You've got dragons. You've got these children that are throwing fireballs. You've got potentially powerful wargs that are on the side of the good guys. We hope there's a lot of. It's not like you just. Endless armies of the dead versus six people.
No,
you know?
Sure.
But I'm just saying that the longer it goes in this vein, the more I worry about some kind of fucking thermal exhaust port up the Knights King's asshole that a lone X-Wing is going to throw a photon torpedo in. And, you know, that shit was cool when I was 6 years old. significantly less so now. But that's another kind of worry that I've got.
Yeah, I don't know why, but I'm not super worried about that.
Yeah, because Martin's not a fool. Uh-huh. He would know how unsatisfying that would be.
You'd think so.
On the other hand, it'd be extremely satisfying to have three giant war dragons like breathing fire onto those very flammable whites and you know, highly trained, faceless men, Valyrian steel ninjas. I mean, there's a lot of cool things.
Sure.
You know, it always goes back to pirates and ninjas and aliens, right?
Yeah.
So there you go, except for dragons in this case. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's all the feedback we got. Is there anything you've got for last words?
I don't think so. I'm, you know, still looking forward to season six quite a bit. It's not like I'm not on board with this show anymore.
We've got some treats coming up for club members. Tonight starts our playthrough of the Telltale Game of Thrones. There's three episodes now, right?
I think so, yeah.
So this Tuesday and two Tuesdays hints. Scheduled to be determined. We're going to be playing through those three episodes live, and we're going to start tonight at 7:30, I think.
Something like that. Sure. Let's say 7:30.
7:30. It'll be on the baldmove.com website, the link for it. And yeah, we'll throw it through Patreon and all that stuff too. But that's going to be coming up for some cool stuff for the next few weeks. You know, we got True Detective coming back. We got Fear the Walking Dead. Presumably the Leftovers and Fargo will get in this season. They got a lot of cool stuff coming up down the Bald Move Pike. So if you like our stuff and you want to get in on that, please support us through club.baldmove.com. Yeah, so if you'd like to send us feedback, I'll still be reading it. Game of Thrones at baldmove.com. You can also get on our forums, which I'm sure you know, people are even now discussing casting news and all the other stuff. And I will say, if there's one thing I wish I had back, it's my analysis of the casting news last week on the spoiler section, because I feel like I fucked up a bunch of stuff and there's way cooler ideas and probably more relevant ideas that people have had. But you can discuss that on our forums at forums.baldmove.com. And if you want to see all of our new stuff coming out, best way to do that is a follow on the site at baldmove.com or get on Facebook and Twitter and subscribe and like and follow and whatever to keep that social media engine going.
Oh, what a pitch. What a pitch. All right. Well,
life's a pitch, man.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll, of course, be back next year with more of these things. You know, we'll do the standard season preview cast that we do a week before the show starts.
Also, I floated an idea that was very popular of if the Winds of Winter come out before the show, that doing some sort of Bald Move book club.
Yeah, yeah. So stay tuned for that.
So, I don't know what that would look like, but presumably we'd assign a set number of chapters to read. And then we'll welcome everybody to send in their thoughts and we'll share stuff from Reddit. And I could see doing that as whenever it comes out. If it comes out at Christmas, well, you know, I'm not doing it during Christmas, but, you know, early weeks of January, sure, we'll get that started.
Okay.
But yeah, cool. I'm kind of excited about the first ever Bald Move Book Club.
Yeah.
So it's all on your shoulders, Martin.
It's a lot resting on those shoulders. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. See you next year.
See ya.